Okay, hey, let me put a spotlight on one thing real fast. Sometimes in life, the most obvious of truths are the hardest to see. Would you agree? Sometimes the most obvious of truths. And let me put a spotlight on something that's obvious, but you should take notice. Was last night fire or what? When we came into the session, was it good? John 6, Jesus as the bread of life. It was a fire sermon, a fire session. And let me just tell you something, man. If you don't know that we have him in the building, we do. We've got the best youth pastor in all of the country, and his name is Dallas Greenaway. Can we make some noise? Yeah. That dude, I tell you what, man, amazing. He's an incredible leader, incredible Bible teacher, and he has started this weekend off so well, okay? All right, hey, let's get into it, man. We're talking about the way. That is the theme of this weekend, okay? And if you haven't felt it already, the Holy Spirit is already moving. He's already working in hearts. He's already elevating Jesus and helping us see the splendor of his glory and the burning brilliance of who he is as the King of Kings. And I hope you're paying attention because God is already working. And I think he's already creating a palpable hunger and appetite in the room for his presence. Amen? Is that true in this place? Yeah. So as that's happening, man, let's continue to keep an ear for what the Spirit's doing. I think he's already working. It's been an amazing weekend. And we're praying that the Lord continues to do more and more what he's already doing. So as Dallas kicked off last night, if your understanding of the gospel is just that we believe in Jesus, so we get a ticket to heaven one day when we die, and when the show's over, we go to the good place and not the bad place. Spoiler alert, you only have but a part of the gospel. Jesus did not come to earth and live an actual real life in Palestine, which is a very real place that you can go, Israel now, and actually walk on the earth 2,000 years ago with his feet on earthly soil and do life for 33 years just to die on a cross and resurrect so that we could have salvation and go to heaven. He did so much more than that. He actually invited us into a way of life, a way of living, a way of thinking, a way of being, a way of breathing, a way of walking and talking. Like Jesus actually had a style of life, and he's inviting us into that life. If you remember the phrase that Dallas said yesterday, there was this first century rabbinical blessing that if you got lost in the dust of your rabbi, you were a blessed man or a blessed woman, which meant that following, to follow someone, is an actual verb. Like you were actually so close on their heels that the dust coming off of their feet was getting onto you. And you were taking notes and you were paying attention. How are they talking with people? How are they dealing with conflict? How are they praying? How are they engaging God? You just watched how they did it. And Jesus, the God-man, who's a human being but filled with deity, he is the perfection of who God is and the perfect representative of who we are, fully God, fully human. He actually lived and breathed on the earth. And in the Gospels, we have his life. Like, has that reality ever landed on you? You get to watch Jesus pray. You get to watch Jesus hang out with ostracized people on the edge who don't have friends. You get to watch Jesus include people at family tables. You get to watch Jesus talk about the Father and his love in the most radical of ways. Like, we watch Jesus do life. And here's his promise. If you follow me, you get life and life abundantly, life to the full, life brimming up, life oozing over, life in three-dimensional, colorful ways that you've never even imagined. He's come to teach us how to live and to be human. And here's his offer. If you follow me, your heart will come alive. You'll literally feel life on the inside. Your heart will resurrect off the table. And it'll come alive. And there's one theologian who said the glory of God is somebody's heart fully alive. And Jesus wants to make human beings fully alive. And that's a beautiful thing. Amen? Is that true? Do you believe it? All right. The Father has really good promises. We just sang about it. I hope you believe that. That's an amazing reality. All right. Let me ask you a question here just to get us started. Have you ever, start with a have you ever moment. Have you ever been tricked before? Have you ever been the butt of a joke? Have you ever been the only one in a moment who didn't know what was going on and you felt played, you felt toyed with, you felt tricked? You ever had one of those moments? All right. It sounds like you have. A lot of empathy in the room. All right, let's rewind time for just a second. This is Tyler Smith, is a sophomore in college. I'm sitting on my couch in my dorm room. It's a Friday night at 7 p.m., and I just finished up soccer practice. And I'm sitting there, and I'm just sitting on my couch, kind of cash, trying to figure out what I'm going to do for the weekend, trying to sort through my weekend plans. And one of my best friends walks down the hallway, and his name is Chad. Wow. Is it because you guys know him, or you just have a thing with that name?
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay, cool, man. Everybody's got a Chad that they know. Let's see if he's like this Chad. So this Chad's walking down the hallway, and I don't know. I'm sitting on the couch. I'm looking at him, and I don't know how to describe what I'm about to describe besides this. He looked like he was about to take the adventure of a lifetime. He had this swagger. He had this way. He had this walk, and as he came down the hallway, I saw a glimmer in his eye and something, an aura following, and I thought, bro, he's up to something. And here's what I saw. I saw a homeboy with one of these right here. And he's literally tromping down the hallway like this. And I said, whoa, guy, where are you going? And what the heck is this? And what are you about to do with this? And he asked me a question that I'm going to ask to you. Have you ever been frog gigging before? Yes. Have you really?
Yes.
A couple of boys in the room. I had no idea what this was until I asked him, what are you doing? And he said, bro, I'm about to go to a pond, I'm going to kill some frogs, I'm going to cut their legs off, fry them, and I'm going to eat frog legs. And dude, I got to be honest with you. I never heard of that before. But something in me, something primitive, something primal, just the man killer instinct was like, I'm in, let's do it, okay? Even though I had no idea where we were going. So I asked him, I said, what's the deal, man? He said, bro, you go to a pond, and we had a pond on our university's property. He said, you take a little flashlight with you, little boy right here, and you shine this on the edge of the pond, and you'll see eyes looking back at you. And when you see those eyes, you know that they're frogs. And then we'll take one of these, and we'll get close enough to said frog, and we'll just kill that thing. I thought, I've literally never heard of a better way to spend my Friday night. I couldn't be more in. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm so in right now. I might be the next advertisement for frog gigging. Anyways, we start to walk. He's the guide. I'm following him. I've literally never done this before, but I couldn't be more in than I am. And this seemed like such a good time. I said to him, hey, man, let's call Shake, who's one of our other best friends, and get him to come. So I call Shake. Shake's one of my best friends, grew up in India. I call him. I said, hey, man, we're about to get into something, and we need you, bro. This is a, like, don't ask questions, just meet us at the pond in, like, 90 seconds, okay? So I call him, and he goes, all right, man, I'm in, but I'm also with Paul. Can Paul come? Now, Paul is from Ecuador. Paul's about 5'1". But dude's got so much personality, he would fight a gorilla, like, without even, this dude's got so much life in him, and he's ready to go, and he's got that killer instinct, too. You know another dude when you come across him and you're like, bro, you got the eye of the tiger. I can't even put it into words, but you got it. Paul's got it. So then Paul comes, Shake comes. We're in the back of this truck headed to the pond. And then we pick up another friend who's walking down the road. He sees us. It seems like a good time. There's another dude who lived on our hall named Tim. Now, Tim is from Maine. Tim's not an outdoorsman. Tim doesn't hunt for frogs. He hunts for deals in shopping malls. You know what I'm saying? Like, if he's doing any hunting, that's the hunting he's doing. But he was interested enough to come. So now we got Tim. So it's me, Chad, Shake, Paul, and Tim. So we're heading to the pond. I'm riding in the front seat with Chad, and the other three dudes are in the back. And Chad says this right here, and I knew something got suspicious. It got sus all of a sudden. He goes, bro, these dudes have never been frog gigging before, ever. He goes, watch this. When we get to the pond, I'm going to have them eating out of my hand. Just watch. He goes, I'm gonna tell them a little lie, and it's gonna create a fun moment. But I'm gonna have them literally eating out of the palm of my hand. And I'm like, bro, what are you talking about? He goes, just watch. We get to the edge of the pond. He hands out about 4 or 5 of these spears right here. He's giving the instructions. Shine the light. Look for the eyes of the frogs. When you see them on the edge of the pond, get close enough and send that Poseidon stick, dude, right through the head of a frog. But then he says this. He goes, man, frogs are pretty delicate and pretty sensitive creatures. So actually, here's what you have to do in order to relax the frog so you can get a good shot. He goes, you have to hum to them, man. They need a melody. They need an anthem. They need a bit of music. You got to relax the frogs in order to soothe them and make them able to get killed. You want to know what I saw? I saw three idiots with a spear in their hand on the edge of the pond going, And I literally thought to myself, I've never been in a moment like this before, and I'll never be in a moment like it after. This is a once-in-a-lifetime moment right here. That's genuinely how it felt. Dude, I wish I could have taken a photo of the look in those dudes' eyes in that moment. It was absolutely priceless. There's a picture and there's a living parable and a split second of a facial expression, and it was a dead giveaway because it's one of the deepest human emotions we can experience. If you looked in Paul and Shake's eyes, here's what I saw. Half a second. It came and then it faded. But the feeling that they felt was betrayed. They, for just a second, they felt lied to. They knew they were the butt of the joke, and they knew that they were the silly expression of a moment, and they were the one on the edge who didn't understand. They felt betrayed. And they felt lied to. And in this living, breathing moment, here's the principle that landed on my heart so powerfully. In the world that we live in, and in the world that we do life in, not every guide is good. And a bad guide is a big problem. Not every guide is good. Not everyone who says, follow me. Not everyone who says, come this way. Not everyone who promises you abundant life is good, because not every guide is good. And a bad guide is actually a really big problem. Do you understand what I'm saying? What's the first question that God ever asked in the scriptures? Do you know? He's just created a world. He's created Eden, and it's beautiful, and it's perfect. Yet a serpent has snuck into that garden and has told a lie. Hey, if you eat this fruit from this tree, it'll actually make you more like God. Don't you want that? Now, I know you'll have to deny his word and deny his authority in the process, but it'll be worth it. And God finds his creatures whom he loves deeply hiding in a fig bush. And they don't come after him, he comes after them. And he finds them and he asks this question, where are you? Not because an omniscient God is lacking information that he's actually asking for, but because he's inviting a confession. Where are you? And this was actually Dallas's sermon last night, which was so beautifully preached. Do you find yourself as just a face in the crowd, or do you find yourself as a follower who's sold out in total surrender to Jesus? What's your spiritual standing and status? It's a good question. Where are you? But the thrust of this morning's message is actually going to be the second question that God asked in the garden. Do you know what question that is? He comes to Adam and Eve and he says, man, who told you that you were naked? Who told you that you could eat of that tree? A bad guide is a big problem, and not every guide is good. Whose voice and message snuck in and told you that that was a good thing? Here's the reality. We're all following something or someone in this life. You want to know something interesting? I was reading Forbes magazine. I don't know how much magazine reading you do, but I was reading Forbes magazine the other day. And they said this, that $853 billion was spent in 2023 on advertising campaigns, which is a lot of money. And it said that they were fighting through branding and social media and commercials. $853 billion, that's almost $1 trillion, was spent on advertising. And it said that they were fighting for the world's greatest currency. And I found this so simple but so profound. Do you know what they said the world's greatest currency is? Yours and my attention. What are we paying attention to? We have a million different guides who are all fighting for one thing, your attention. Because your attention leads into your heart, and your heart is the most priceless and precious part of who you are. Your attention leads to your heart, and loads of money are being spent to win our attention. Here's also the reality. In the cultural landscape right now, there are millions of different guides who want to lead us. We have social media influencers on TikTok, which is all the dances, you know what I'm saying? We have Instagram. Dude, we have the cultural guides of career and successism and money. We have the cultural guides of Netflix. Boy, that's convicting, you know? Just watch one episode of MasterChef, and it's like, why do I know Gordon Ramsay as well as I do? Oh, my gosh. And now we're already moving into another episode. There's so many different guides that are fighting for our attention. And it's right in the middle of this conversation where one guide seems to step up to the front from the back. And he says, man, guide of popularity and status. Let me sneak by real fast. Hey, guide of success and money and careerism in your own family. Let me step by real fast. Hey, guide of having a fantastic time on the weekend. Let me step by real fast. And this one guide seems to come out in front from all the others. He says this. I'm the ultimate guide. Or you can call me the good shepherd. And what would life look like if you gave your heart and your attention to me? And this guide says, I'm the ultimate guide. I trump all the other guides. And the scriptures refer to me as the good shepherd. And I've come to lay down my life for you. And there's no distance that I will not go to win your attention. My love has no boundaries or parameters. I'm for you. I'll never stop being for you. I'll never stop chasing you. I'm the good shepherd. I go after lost things. I love you. One shepherd steps out from the midst of the rest. So I know this is a very simple question this morning, but here's the question. What are you following and why? Just a simple question, but I think pretty profound. What gets most of your attention on a daily basis? What are you following and why? Second question, which will be the thrust of this morning's message. If you decided to follow Jesus and make him your ultimate guide and your good shepherd, how does he plan to lead us? What are some promises that he could actually give to us that would be anchoring in our life? Guys, I don't know if you know this. This book is fat, and it's filled with promises for your life and your destiny if we were to get in here. We're working through the book of John this weekend. It's only 21 chapters. What if you read through the whole thing this weekend? What a challenge. This book is filled with promises about your destiny and your future. So this morning, I want us to ask, if Jesus were to carry Underwood, take the wheel, and lead us, what are things that we can look for in his leadership style? So we're looking for four things this morning, okay? I think there's four promises in the life of Jesus, if he were to lead us, that are palpable, they're tangible, and they could change us from the inside out. All right, we're going to be in John 10 this morning. If you want to come and join me, you can go anywhere. It's a free country, but John 10 is where I'm going to be. Starting in verse 1, Jesus says this, truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name, and he leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know, keyword, the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying. All right, here's what's happened. This story picks up in a lot of controversy and debate and conflict. Jesus is in hot water, to steal a language from Dallas from yesterday night. Jesus is in hot water with the religious leaders. He's just done a healing where a man born blind, I'm going to call him Bobby, okay? Because it's just alliteration, you know? The man born blind's name is Bobby. He gets healed by Jesus. He cannot see, has an encounter with the living Jesus, and now he can see. It's interesting, if you read John 9, there's really no break between John 9 and John 10. He goes home, and he's celebrating this miracle that just happened. Man, I didn't have sight, and now I do. I couldn't see, now I can. And he goes home, and folks are looking at him, and they're like, is that Bobby? Bobby, you couldn't see, bro. You were begging for a living on the corner because you didn't have eyes that worked. And some folks are like, no, that's not Bobby. That's not Bobby. And some folks are like, yeah, that's Bobby. That's literally Bobby. And then Bobby rolls up, and he goes, it's me. It's Bobby. I couldn't see, now I can. And they're like, what happened? And he says this, I had an interaction with a man, but I don't know his name. But he walked with a kind of authority that was attractive. And he was gentle and empathetic. And when he spoke to me, it just sounded like his voice was from heaven. And he said, man, do you want to receive your sight back? And I said, yeah, it'd be the greatest thing in the world. And he actually gave it back to me. And the religious leaders are frustrated over this because they feel Jesus stepping onto the scene and almost taking some of their influence and some of their prestige. And they don't like that someone else is walking around with so much glory. And so Jesus actually has this moment with this man named Bobby who's been healed. But the Pharisees and the religious leaders are listening closely. And he says, man, here's what's crazy. I've come into the world so that those who cannot see will see. But those who think that they're seeing will actually become blind. Now, is Jesus talking any longer about physical sight at this point? No, Jesus is just taking the conversation deeper if you perceived what's going on. And he says, man, you guys who actually think you have it all together and you present yourselves as shepherds of God's people and you think you see clearly, you're actually blind. Because you're following the guide, not of Yahweh, but of religion. You think if you check off enough boxes and if you tithe the right amount of things in your pantry and if you say the right things and do the right things and show up to the right places and if your spiritual performance is good enough, you think it actually earns you a ticket into heaven. And I'm just telling you, that's not how it works. And you've got a mask on that looks good on the outside, but it's dead on the inside and you're actually blind. And in this story, do you remember what Jesus says? He tells this story of a sheep and a shepherd and the relationship between the two. And yet, who does not understand the story when Jesus is done teaching it? What does verse 6 say? Who misses it? Who does not understand it? The Pharisees. The Pharisees don't get it. Jesus says, man, I'm a shepherd. The sheep will know my voice. And what is sadly ironic is that you don't understand the things that I'm saying. So Jesus, in this leadership style, he's just performed a miracle. The religious leaders don't get it. They're blind by their own religiosity and their own performance, thinking that earns them a status before God. And Jesus is talking about, you think you're the real spiritual leaders and you're not. But I am the shepherd, the ultimate guide, and I've come to lead my people. And there's a unique relationship here. I know my sheep's name and they know my voice and they follow me. But the voice of a stranger they won't follow, which is why they're not following you. Somehow you guys as robbers and thieves have climbed in over the back gate, but I come to the gatekeeper and he knows me because I'm familiar to him and he actually opens up the door to me, but to you, you have to climb in by another way. So interesting, note the dynamic here. If Jesus is the shepherd, who are we? The sheep. Has anyone ever seen a sheep before? You have? Let me just throw one up just in case. Let's look at a sheep real fast. Yep. Not the most glorious pick right here. But this is a sheep, fam, and Jesus connects us to the sheep right here. Now, let me connect a dot real fast. Sheep are actually not the most intelligent or the most smart of creatures, okay? But he's not, like, devaluing our dignity. He's just saying that, man, sheep sometimes get lost. Sometimes they wander. Sometimes they go away from the shepherd. Let's throw up the next photo. This was a clip in 2005 where 1,100 sheep in Turkey... Actually, sorry, 1,500. We're on a pasture in Turkey. And the shepherd took a little break, took a little pause. Maybe he went home to make lunch. I don't know. But there's 1,500 sheep on a little like hillside right here. Well, a couple of them wander over to a cliff. And one of them gets right here to the cliff. And we'll just call that sheep Steve because it rhymes. Actually, it doesn't rhyme. It's just two S's in a row. But anyways, Steve's right here. He looks over the edge and he goes, 60-foot drop. Why not, man? I'm an adventurous boy. And Steve takes a jump. He lands on the bottom and he dies. They wander, sheep get lost. Hey, here's what 399 other sheep behind Steve do. They go, oh, dude, Steve looked like he had a pretty wild ride down, dude. Let me give that a shot. They also jump because they follow Steve. Now, here's what's hilarious. There's 400 dead sheep at the bottom of a cliff. 1,100 sheep come up behind them and go, looked fun. They also jump. You want to know the benefit of the back 1,100? They had 400 nice sheep. It's like a real soft Serta mattress down here. So they hit the bottom like a trampoline, bop, and just came back up. They lived is what I'm saying, okay? So 1,100 had the credits of going last. Now, here's the temptation with sheep, is to think that we don't have much in common with them. But we have more in common with them than I think we'd like to confess. Sheep wander, man. They get lost. It's easy for them to walk off of cliffsides and get lost in thickets. And I tell you what, man. The human spirit is so proclivity to this right here, man. We make a vow, we break a vow. We make a commitment, we break a commitment. We start a resolution, we lose a resolution. Man, I'll never do that thing again. I promise, I swear, hold me accountable. I'll never do it again. And then give me 20, 30 minutes, and I'm doing that thing again that I said I'd never do. I'm looking at things on my phone I said I'd never look at. I'm back at that party I said I'd never go to. I'm using language I promised I'd give up. And somehow my willpower just doesn't seem enough to keep me from doing that thing I know I don't want to do. And all the things I want to do, I don't do. And all the things I don't want to do, I just find myself doing. And then all of a sudden, before we realize it, Jesus, the master teacher, is drawing us into the story. Because we're a lot more like sheep than we realize. But here's what's wild, friends. Jesus says, man, I love my sheep. Don't miss the parable. I know them by name. And when I come up to the gatekeeper and I call them, they follow me because they know my voice. My sheep are able to discern and distinguish between my voice, the ultimate guide, the good shepherd, and other false guides who are blind guides leading them off of cliffs. They have the ability to discern the difference. So let me ask you a question. Are we able to, in the room, pick out the voice of Jesus above other voices in culture? A lost skill in this generation is actually the ability to just simply hear the voice of God. Now, what I'd love to do is hit a pause on this sermon and do a 45-minute sermon on how to hear the voice of God. And I think a lot of it is just getting lost in his book, so we become familiar with his words, and then we begin to pray to him, the language he's given to us, and then we sit in spaces long enough to actually listen for him to dialogue back with us. But if we're a sheep, we have to be able to hear his voice. He says he knows your name, man. You know what's wild? Romans 8:34 says this, that Jesus right now in the heavenly places is sitting at the right hand of the Father, and he's actually interceding on your behalf. Hebrews 7:25 backs it up and says the same thing. Do you know what that means? That this morning while you were a sheep, asleep. Sorry, that was a bad joke. My bad. I got so much to learn, man, on the way. The dad jokes, man. Send me dad jokes if you have them, please. If anyone has really good dad jokes, that was an invitation to send them, okay? That was an invitation. While you were sleeping at 3:33 a.m. this morning, do you know who's praying for you? It's actually a pretty wild thought if you'd ponder it for a few seconds. You know who's praying for you at 3:33 a.m. while you were asleep this morning? You know whose mind you were on? You know whose imagination you were wandering in this morning? Well, you didn't even know it, man. You weren't even aware of it. But because he's fond of you, because you're a sheep, you were on the lips and the mind of Jesus, the shepherd. Bro, what kind of love is this? This is what the psalmists talk about. I've discovered a love in the shepherd that's better than life. It's better than sex. It's better than money. It's better than relationships. It's better than parties. It's better than drugs. It's better than popularity, status. You line up whatever you think is cool and abundant, and Jesus' love just trumps it. Here's the reality, friends. We are sheep in the story. But our confidence in Jesus is not built on our ability to hold on to him, but it is built on his ability to hold on to us. And that's the gospel. I don't know if you know that. The gospel, the emphasis of the gospel is not your love for God. It's way wilder than that. It's his radical love for you. And our confidence as sheep does not come from our ability to hear, although that's important. It comes from his ability to hold on to us being stronger than our ability to hold on to him. Do you believe that? He's a good shepherd, and he's expert at finding us, which is pretty amazing. All right, first promise to the shepherd. You ready? Hey, I haven't lost you. Are you guys hungry? Yeah. You guys still out there? Okay, first promise to the shepherd right here. He's the ultimate guide. He's the good shepherd. First promise is this. To guide you. He's the one who surveys the land. He's the one studying the topography. He's the one who knows the seasons of your life. He's the one who knows your deepest points of pain and pressure. He's the one who knows your heart. He's the one who knows your proclivities to sin. He's the one who knows all the things about your heart, and he still says, my grace for you is stronger than your sin. Let me guide you. Are you in need of a guide? I'm the good shepherd. First one is guide. All right, come with me down to verse 7. Jesus then says this. He goes on in the story. So Jesus again said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, I'm the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. Now, I got to be honest with you, man. It gets a little weird right here. I've never met somebody and been like, hey, man, my name's Tyler. What's your name? And then they go, yo, my name's Door. I would immediately go, Rachel, what medicine do we need to give this person? Like, if you confess that your name is Door, I got issues with you, okay, bro? So here's the deal. Two primary places that sheep would live was in the pasture and in the pen. Now, if you were staying in a pen in urban areas, then you would have the privilege and the luxury of having gatekeepers come and watch your sheep at night while you slept. But if you were pasturing and leading your sheep out on the hillsides and the mountains, you'd have primitive pens. And out there, you were the night watcher. And I think we've got a little photo of what a pen looks like. They could be made of bricks or stone, or they could be made of brush. But here's what they would do. The shepherd would lead the sheep inside the pen. And when Jesus says he's the door, he's saying that at night, instead of hiring a gatekeeper, he's just going to sleep in that door, which is a pretty wild task. But here's what it means. If you enter by me, which is an exclusive claim, and you come into the pen, into my household, into my family, and you come through me, I'm going to protect you. Because I'm going to sleep in that door, and no one's coming in to get you. No one can snatch you out of my hand. John 10 will go on to say that. And if anyone tries to get you or come at you or have harmful intentions towards you, they got to come through me. Maybe a Gen Z translation would be like, yo, if you try and come through Jesus to get the sheep, you're about to catch the smoke. Okay, that's what Jesus is saying right here. I'll protect you. Think about Psalm 23, which is a commentary on John 10. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me, and your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Now, do you know what a rod was used for? It's like a stick like this. If a wolf or a creature or whatever tried to come and mess with the sheep, the shepherd would take a rod and he would whip that wolf into shape. You want to know who Jesus is not? A soft, sensitive, cuddly shampoo model airbrush dude who chilled by campfires and sung kumbaya. He's a shepherd. He walked with authority. He's a king. And if you belong to him, he promises you protection. Now, it does not mean that your life will be easy, and it does not mean that you will not suffer, because Jesus did say to follow me means to take up a cross. But it does mean that the shepherd goes with you everywhere you go, and you will find a peace that surpasses all kinds of understanding, so much so that you won't fear evil itself, even if you're in the darkest valley. Do you believe that? That's his invitation. Walk with me, and I'm the ultimate guide and the good shepherd, and you'll experience protection. The good shepherd protects. That's the second one. All right, third one. He not only leads his sheep into the pen, but he leads them out where? What's the other P here? Where? All right, out into the pasture. You remember Psalm 23 where David says, the Lord is my shepherd, and I shall not want. He makes me lie down. Listen to the poetry. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. The good shepherd guides. He protects. Third one, he provides. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Everything that I need, Jesus promises to give me. And if it feels like he's not done that, then it might fall in the category of want, not need. Dude, listen to the beautiful imagery of it. He makes me lie down in green grass, grassy meadows, still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me into pasture. Dude, sheep were never happiest than when they were at the golden corral of green meadows and they were eating. And Jesus says, I promise to lead you there. Pasture is synonym for life. I'm your life source. I know what you need. I'm scanning the horizon, and I promise to take you there and to take you to the pasture when you need to go and to lead you to the pen when it's time. I'm the good shepherd. I'm the ultimate guide. The good shepherd, he guides, he provides, he protects. Let's go to the next verse 10. You guys still with me? You still out there?
Yeah.
All right, I haven't lost you. Are you guys hungry?
Yeah.
Hey, all right, let's eat, man. The scriptures are spiritual food. Here we go. He then says this, I'm the door. If anyone enters by me, he'll be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. And then he says, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Jesus just identifies a villain in the story. This is the villain of all time throughout the scriptures. Jesus saying, hey, I don't want you to think that we live in a neutral world. C.S. Lewis said, every split second, every moment is being contested and claimed by Satan and then counterclaimed by Yahweh himself. If as a Christian you don't have a framework that we live in a war zone, where your attention is being fought for and hearts are being won to different kingdoms and not always Jesus's, but the domain of darkness exists as well. If you don't understand that there's an enemy who seeks to get into the pen and steal your life, then you'll misunderstand the world you live in. And Jesus is inviting us into his world. Here's what's interesting. If you study the scriptures, we get the agenda of Satan right here. To steal, kill, and destroy. 2 Corinthians 11:14 says that Satan is so crafty and will invite you to take the fruit so stealthily that he'll actually cloak himself as an angel of light in disguise. He'll use the veneer of good things, but he's actually a liar at his core, and lie is like his native tongue. So pay attention and learn to discern the voice of the shepherd who gives abundant life versus the voice of Satan who steals, kills, and destroys. He does not have our best interests in mind. Now, let me rewind. Who is Jesus telling this story in front of? You guys remember? Who's the audience? Are the Pharisees spiritually seeing as Jesus is talking about, or are they spiritually blind? They're blind. 2 Corinthians 4 says this, Satan above all else seeks to blind us from the glory of Jesus. And he will use any tactic, any measure to blind us, to keep us from seeing how good Jesus is, how amazing his life is, how wonderful his hope is, how good it is to have him breathe into our stories and wake us up and make us alive. Satan, day and night, is trying to distract our attentions from seeing the goodness of a king who wants our best no matter the moment. And in this story, Jesus is trying to powerfully but gently correct the thoughts and the views of the Pharisees who claim to have the knowledge but ironically are missing the miracle and the king who stand right in front of them. Let me just ask a question. Is there anything about Jesus that you don't see? Is there anything that Jesus is currently doing in your life that you just don't see? Is there any ways that he's moving in your story, in your journey, but you just don't see it? Satan comes to blind our eyes from seeing the work of the greatest king who's ever graced the earth. We have a good shepherd. He's an ultimate guide, and he promises to guide us and provide us and protect for us and at times gently correct us when we find ourselves off track. He calls us back. Is that a good shepherd, fam? Yes. He guides, he provides, he protects, and he what? Oh, you're asleep. Come on, fam. A good shepherd, he guides, he provides, he protects, and he what? He corrects. Sorry, that's the word I was looking for. He corrects. He guides. He provides. He protects. and he corrects. If we take Jesus up on this abundant life, that's how we can expect for him to lead us. Those are some of his promises. And listen, as followers of Jesus, we need to cling to his promises. He guides us. He provides for us. He protects us. And at times when we get off track, he will correct us. There's one question that I haven't asked yet, and I wonder if it's been looming in your brain the whole time I've been talking. You know what the question is? If Jesus really is a good shepherd, and if he really is the ultimate guide, and if I do decide to follow him above the millions of other guides that exist in culture, and he promises to guide me and provide for me and protect me and at times lovingly correct me, there's one question we've still yet to ask. Where is he taking us? If he knows the way, where is he leading us? Man, I remember whenever I was in middle school and I'd go outside and I'd play on the block. My dad had this thing, man. He just said, hey, when the street lights come on at night, that's your cue to come back home. You see those street lights? Come on, bro. You've been out too late. It's time to come home. Older folks in the room might relate to that. And I remember, dude, if I ever stayed out too late or if I was hanging out with friends and it got dark and those street lights came on and I was not back at the house yet, you know what I'd hear? Tyler, it's time to come home. And I would hear my father's voice booming and echoing throughout the neighborhood. And it was strong, but it was kind. It was tough, but it was tender. And I'd hear his voice, and dude, it chokes me up to think about. I'd hear his voice, and I knew, I got a father who loves me. And he's calling me home. Jesus is a good shepherd, and what defines the shepherd most is that he will lay down his life for the sheep. The king has spent the greatest currency he can spend, and it's his own blood. And he's laid that blood down on an altar in order to purchase back our hearts, to make us right with the Father, to extend us forgiveness, to heal the deepest parts of pain and brokenness and secret sins that no one else knows about. He loves us. There's nothing else he could have done that he's not already done. We have a good shepherd who loves us, and he's laid his life down for us. And do you know where he's leading us? He's leading us home. And that is a beautiful promise. And if you let that promise sink down into your bones, it will change the way that you do every single day of your life. Because you then start to realize we live in an in-between space and life is temporary and life doesn't last forever. We live in the already but not yet kingdom. And a full kingdom is on its way, although we've tasted it in part. And Jesus has promised to come back and to take us home. We have a good shepherd. He's our ultimate guide. And his invitation to us is, follow me. You got millions of voices in the world. The question is, whose voice will be loudest in your head? Who will you choose to follow? Could be the greatest question of your life and of mine. Dallas is going to talk a lot about home tonight, and I cannot wait. Father in heaven, thank you so much for this crew. Thank you so much for these students. Thank you so much for these leaders. Thank you so much that you have a way and that you want us to walk in that way. In this real world, in this life, and that you're leading us somewhere and that we can trust you. You know the way, and we don't have to know everything about our journey or our life. You're asking us just to be faithful in just the next step, to be obedient in the thing that you're calling to us right now. And so, Father, across the room, I just ask that whatever you're whispering in ears, whatever you're saying, whatever truths that you're bringing to minds and to hearts, would we obey that? Would we respond in joy and in confidence and in surrender? You're a good shepherd, and you know us by name, and you know exactly what we need, and you've promised to protect us at all costs, and you've promised to call us back when we get off track, and you have a place prepared for us. You are the good shepherd. Lord, we love you, And as we worship now, would you have us in your name? Amen.